Hello, dear listeners. Whether you're just finding us or have been with us for a while, welcome. At Dreams and Crimes, we've got a treasure trove of stories waiting to be discovered. We like to describe them as a cozy blanket after a long day of work, or a ticket to a thrilling adventure before bed. If you're a long-time listener, thanks for sticking with us. Your support means the world. Want to take it up a notch? Consider subscribing to Dreams and Crimes on Apple Podcasts or YouTube. We're cooking up something special, turning these stories into videos. We've put a lot of efforts into them, and they're actually super good. And now, let's dive into today's story. The Body in the Bag. As a young child in suburban Sydney, Australia, Will Matheson seemed to be a normal kid by all accounts. But life at home was far from normal. Will was born in 1982 to two talented and highly intelligent parents, but their eccentricities were beyond extreme. His mother was a professional violinist, and his father was a former teacher and musician who collected junk for a hobby. As a young boy, Will and his father would walk the streets late at night, rummaging through garbage cans and dumpsters, looking for anything his father might find interesting. The Matheson family were extreme hoarders. Their home was in constant disarray, filled to the ceiling with a chaotic mess of junk, leaving only a small path to walk between rooms. Will's parents didn't have a bedroom. Instead, they pulled out a small mattress and laid it on the kitchen floor every night. Both his mother and father suffered from psychiatric problems, and his older brother, Edward, had been diagnosed with schizophrenia. Will was just 9 years old when his 17-year-old brother was admitted to a mental hospital. During a visit by Will, he and Edward walked the grounds of the institution. Edward led Will to the roof of the building, where he jumped to his death, while Will watched in horror. At such a young age, Will was unable to properly process what had happened, and his eccentric parents weren't best suited to help him. Will retreated into his mind and his own eccentricities. By his teenage years, Will had developed a deep fixation with death. He listened to music called horrorcore, a subgenre of rap music, but with psychotic, supernatural, and violent themes. Though Will didn't have many friends, he became known throughout the school as PK, an acronym for Porn King, because he would duplicate porn tapes and sell them to the boys in his school. Like his family members, Will excelled musically. He played several instruments, but was a particularly talented cellist, playing in a quartet that would often play gigs at various events. When he finished high school in 2000, Will had no close friends to speak of apart from the friends in his quartet. Like his father, he scavenged things from the streets of Sydney and developed a fascination with dead animals. His bedroom was decorated with his collection of bones, skulls, and dead animal skins he had collected. Will made a living breeding rats. His bedroom and bathroom were filled with as many as 300 rats, some in cages, some running loose. After graduation from high school, Will remained in his quartet and occasionally played paid gigs. It was at one of these gigs, in April 2001, a wedding, that he met Lindsay Van Blanken. 18-year-old Will Matheson was a last-minute replacement for the regular cellist in the quartet, and 15-year-old Lindsay was a bridesmaid at her mother's wedding. Lindsay's best friend noticed Matheson, and by the end of the evening gave him both her own number and Lindsay's. Lindsay Van Blanken was like any other young Australian girl. She was shy, loved to play online video games, and had a passion for drawing. She dreamed of working in animation someday. Not long after the wedding, Lindsay and Will began dating, but it was an odd relationship. Will was aloof and non-committal, always keeping her at arm's length. Perhaps this intrigued her, or perhaps she was fascinated by his dark side. Over time, the two developed a relationship, and Lindsay started to change. She became fascinated by the same macabre things as Will. She began to dress in dark, drab clothes like him, talk like him, and would walk the streets at night with him, often through cemeteries. Though the two grew close, Will remained reserved and distant. He was Lindsay's first boyfriend, and his indifference only intrigued her more. Eventually, Will confided to her that his brother had committed suicide in front of him, and he told her of his own suicidal thoughts. One evening, when they were chatting on the computer, he told her he was going to kill himself. Terrified, Lindsay had her parents rush her to his house, but when she arrived in tears, he was laughing at her. He had been toying with her the whole time. On Valentine's Day, she bought a small teddy bear and a single rose and placed it on the front steps of Will's home. When Lindsay's mother later asked her how he liked the present, she told her mother that he gave it back to her. He told Lindsay that he wasn't the sort of person that wanted presents. Their relationship was an unconventional one. Lindsay was a talented artist, having drawn since a very young age. The longer she dated Will, the more her drawings and paintings became sinister and eerie. By the time she turned 16, her parents began to worry about her new persona, and with good reason. Lindsay had always been an excellent student, but uncharacteristically she became depressed and dropped out of school during her senior year. After more than 2 years of dating, Lindsay knew her relationship with Will was affecting her life negatively. She wanted to end it, but had no idea how to break it off. Lindsay loved to play online video games and used the nickname Demon_Nurse. One of her regular opponents in the online game was a 20-year-old from Seattle named Brandon Leonard. After several months of playing online with Brandon, they began chatting and sending photos to each other. Though they hadn't met in person, it wasn't long before the exchange formed into an online romance. Though Lindsay was now committed to her online boyfriend Brandon, she still hadn't broken it off with Will. As with many 18-year-old girls, she just didn't know how to do it and kept putting it off. During the same time, Lindsay had heard that Disney Animation Studios had opened an office in Sydney and they were looking for trainee animation artists. It was her dream job. Lindsay submitted her illustrations, as did over 300 other applicants. To her delight, Lindsay was the most talented of the applicants and started her exciting new career with Disney. Lindsay's parents were elated. Her attitude towards everything began to change back to the old Lindsay. She started dressing in more presentable clothes, went back to her cheerful attitude, and saw Will less and less. Brandon was happy for her as well, and the two of them were now madly in love. That's when Brandon proposed to her over the internet, and she joyfully accepted. On September 8, 2003, Lindsay knew it was time to break it off with Will. Brandon was flying to Sydney the next day, and she knew it had to be done. When she told Will it was over, he was heartbroken and angry. He cried, pled with her, and told her he would kill himself, but she was steadfast and ended their relationship. However, she didn't tell him about Brandon, or that they were planning to get married. When Brandon arrived in Sydney, the two of them were a happy couple planning the rest of their lives together, but Will had no intention of letting her go. He began stalking her on her way to work at her new job. When Will inevitably saw Lindsay with Brandon, he exploded in anger. Knowing he could never get Lindsay back, he confronted Brandon at the apartment where he was staying. Will told the few friends he had that he was considering suicide. He was still deeply in love with Lindsay, but he hated her at the same time. His anger consumed him. Lindsay was terrified. Will spent almost every day following her to and from work. He would be waiting at bus stops, knowing the time she was due to show up. He would even stand across the street in the middle of the night, staring up at her bedroom window. This went on for 2 months. He wanted her to know he would be a part of her life whether she liked it or not. Brandon wanted Lindsay to meet his parents, and the two of them made plans to travel back to Seattle for Christmas. On November 22nd, Lindsay got a text from Matheson. "I see you," was all it said. Terrified, she broke down crying. Her parents reassured her and told her not to worry. She would leave for Seattle soon and it would all be over. On November 24th, one of Lindsay's co-workers at Disney noticed her arguing with a young man outside of the office during the lunch break. He could see it was a heated argument, but didn't want to interfere. That same evening, Lindsay took the train back to her home in Queen's Park. She got off the train at the Bondi Junction railway station where she was seen on security cameras at 5:58 p.m., leaving the station. That would be the last time she was seen alive. That evening, when Lindsay didn't arrive at home at her normal time, Brandon and her parents became worried. Though they tried all night long, there was no answer from her phone and no text messages. Early the next morning, Brandon called the police and reported his fiancée missing. Her parents explained to the police that it was completely out of character for Lindsay to disappear on her own. They also informed the police that she was being stalked by her ex-boyfriend, Will Matheson. The family suspected Will had something to do with her disappearance, and Lindsay's older sister Louise called Will to see what he had to say. Will claimed he had seen Lindsay that evening as she got off the train at Bondi Junction. He told Louise that he had walked with her toward her home for about 10 or 15 minutes, then left her. He said that the last time he saw her was in an alley behind the Charing Cross pub. Louise thought it was odd that Lindsay would be in an alley behind a pub. Walking through an alley was not something that Lindsay would normally do. Adding more confusion to the call, Will's eccentric father burst in on the line during their conversation and said, "Well, I didn't see any blood on his hands." This startled Louise, and she later informed police about the strange conversation. 2 days after she had gone missing, the police pulled Matheson into the station for an interview. He was calm and morose, speaking in a monotone. His demeanour alone raised the police's suspicion. Again, Matheson stuck to his story and said that he had walked with her after she had got off the train, then left her. Investigators asked for a DNA swab, fingerprints and photographs, and Matheson agreed. But when he pulled off his shirt for the photographs, it raised hairs on the back of investigators' necks. He had several cuts and scrapes on his chest, hands and arms. He also had scrapes on his knees. Will explained that the cuts and scrapes were from his rats and cats, and he claimed the scrapes on his knees were from a skateboarding fall. Matheson told police that when he heard Lindsay was missing, he called her family and her friends. But the police noticed something he had omitted. He didn't mention that he had actually tried to call Lindsay. If he believed she was still alive, he would have tried to call her. This was yet another aspect of the interview that raised the police's suspicion. They were sure he was involved, but with no definitive evidence, they had to let him go. Detectives retraced her last steps, and an extensive search of the area began. Police searched parks and streets in the area, and divers searched the lakes in Centennial Park near her home, but their efforts garnered no clues. Police then showed Lindsay's co-worker a lineup of mugshots to see if he recognised the person that was arguing with Lindsay outside of her office that day. He easily pointed out Will Matheson. 2 weeks after Lindsay's disappearance, police received a phone call at 1:30 a.m. from a member of the public reporting what they thought was a prowler. When the police arrived, they found Will Matheson walking the streets and alleys carrying a backpack. Inside that backpack was another backpack containing several suspicious items: a pair of metal scissors, a box cutter, and a hatchet. They also found 3 pairs of latex surgical gloves, hospital-grade disinfectant, 2 flashlights, candles and candle holders, black plastic garbage bags, several newspapers, moisturizer, and a small bottle of water. Matheson told police it was holy water. Police brought Matheson in for questioning, and again his demeanour was subdued. He claimed the items were for a picnic. Investigator: what can you tell me about those items? Matheson: I was going to, go up to the park and have a picnic. Investigator: At 1:30 in the morning? Matheson: Yeah. Police suspected Lindsay was already dead, and his plans were to dismember and dispose of her body. Again, they had no definitive evidence that they could use to hold him. Matheson was free to go, but police started 24-hour surveillance on him. On January 10th, 2004, the residents of a small apartment building in Queen's Park complained to their building maintenance man of a horrible stench coming from the storage room below the apartments. The maintenance man went into the storage room and noticed a mattress covering an interior doorway. When he pulled the mattress away and pushed the door open, a horrid smell knocked him back. The small room was filled with junk, boxes, and furniture. As he pushed aside items and made his way to the back of the room, he noticed an oversized sports bag. It was a huge bag used to carry cricket bats and equipment. He tried to pick it up, but couldn't. It was too heavy. Barely able to handle the foul smell, he dragged the bag out of the room into the open air. He then used a pocket knife to cut it open, and a small human hand fell out. When detectives arrived, they had a sinking feeling it was the body of Lindsay Van Blanken. Before they had a chance to identify her, the media got word of the body being found and broadcast it on the news. Lindsay's grandmother saw the news and called her granddaughter Louise and asked if it might be Lindsay. Louise assured her grandmother that if it was Lindsay, the police would surely have alerted the family before they would let the media know. Louise's curiosity overwhelmed her and she called the lead investigator. Sadly, the investigator told her that it might be the body of Lindsay. Using the clothes she was wearing and the engagement ring on her finger, they positively identified her as Lindsay Van Blanken. She had been strangled using cable ties. Two cable ties had been put together to make a loop large enough to slip over her head, and a quick pull would have ratcheted down on her throat. The loop had been tightened down to only 10 inches, closing off her ability to breathe. Her fingernails were almost ripped off, most likely from scratching her attacker. Her body had then been folded and stuffed into the bag, then tucked in the corner of the storage room for 8 weeks. The day after Lindsay's body was found, Will Matheson was having a mental breakdown. He told his father he was hearing voices in his head. Will sat his father down in front of the television and showed him the nightly news he had recorded of Lindsay's body being found. His parents called the hospital, and mental health workers admitted him into a psychiatric hospital where he remained for the next 8 weeks. Will's father said, "So he came inside and looked at the midnight news, and when he finished looking at it, he just sat down and cried. He said, 'I think I've done that.' And he pulled his legs into his chest in the fetal position and just cried and cried." Because Will had been admitted to a mental hospital, police were not able to question him, but they were allowed to search the family home. Inside Will's bedroom was a stench almost as bad as a rotting corpse, but the smell came from his rats and rat excrement. There were rats everywhere, and the ceiling was covered with flies. Will had collected clippings from all the newspapers with any stories pertaining to Lindsay. The room was full of keepsakes of Lindsay, such as notes, letters, and videotapes. Also in his room was Lindsay's diary of notes and drawings. It was a very personal and precious diary to her that she would never have given to Will or anyone else. The most incriminating evidence was found in the top drawer of his dresser. They found a small dictaphone and two tapes. When police played the tapes, they found what they considered to be a confession. One tape had a song he had recorded in a muted, tragic voice. The lyrics were, "Just the other day I watched you pass away. You said I love you. Please let me stay. Help is not here for you or me. Close your eyes. When you go is where I'll be. I'll meet you in eternity." He also spoke in a whispering voice into the dictaphone. "It's all because of him. He didn't want you to hurt me as a friend. I hope you understand that. I didn't want to let you go. I told you I didn't want to let you go. In many of the additional musings on the tapes, he spoke of Lindsay in the past tense. When detectives questioned his parents, Will's father admitted that he had been shopping with his son in Bondi Junction 2 days before Lindsay went missing. He told police that when Will returned to the car, he was carrying a large sports bag. The bag that Lindsay's body was found in was a very specific type of cricket bag. Using the brand and model of the bag, police were able to find that there was only one store in the area which carried that specific bag, and they had only sold one of them. It was sold 2 days before Lindsay went missing, at 1:30 p.m. for $120, and was paid for in cash. Investigators then searched through security cameras in the Bondi Junction shopping area during the time that Will's father said the two of them were there. They found footage of Will walking near Rebel Sports just before 1:30 p.m. In March 2004, Will Matheson was discharged from the psychiatric hospital and police immediately brought him back in for additional questioning. Despite his admission to his father and to hospital staff, during his interrogation he continued to deny any involvement in Lindsay's death. Even when shown the video evidence, Matheson still denied purchasing the sports bag. Detectives then took Matheson on a walk around Bondi Junction and ended up at the storage room where her body was found. He admitted he and Lindsay had been in the storage room months before, but claimed he had never been into the interior room. When they asked him to walk into the interior room and told him that was where her body was found, he broke down and asked to leave. "Can we go somewhere else? Can we just go somewhere else?" Again, without sufficient grounds, the police let him go while they gathered more evidence. Surprisingly, just a few days later, Matheson requested another interview with the police. He had something to tell them. In the subsequent interview, Matheson confided that he had been hearing voices. Matheson: "I've been under distress of mental problems, hearing voices and the such." Police: "What are these voices saying to you?" Matheson: "Just to cause destruction. To kill people, to cause harm to myself." Despite having no previous diagnosis, Matheson and his parents claimed he was mentally ill. On May 19, 2004, police arrested Will Matheson for the murder of Lindsay Van Blanken. The prosecution spent the next year and a half preparing for the trial. During the trial, Matheson was as emotionless as ever and had trouble maintaining eye contact with anyone in the courtroom. Despite his claims of mental illness, the prosecution showed that the murder was premeditated. He had purchased the cricket bag just 2 days prior to killing her. He had tied two cable ties together and trimmed off the edges, making it easier to slip over her head. He had lured her to the storeroom and had the bag there waiting for her. All the evidence showed that he had clearly planned the murder ahead of time. The judge found that whatever psychiatric condition he had been suffering from had little to do with his premeditation. In 2006, Will Matheson was sentenced to a minimum of 18 years in prison without the chance of parole, and a maximum of 27 years. In 2015, however, the court ruled that a legal error had been made during his trial and his maximum sentence was reduced, making him eligible for parole in 2022. Though he had originally denied his involvement in her murder, once in prison, he finally admitted that he had killed Lindsay. In 2016, a backpack was found when a construction crew was clearing a building site in the Sydney suburb of Randwick. The backpack was determined to belong to Lindsay Van Blanken, and inside they found over 40 bone fragments. 12 of the bones were human, and the remainder were from animals. Of the human bones, one was a leg bone, and another was a skull fragment with a nail driven through it. The bones belonged to as many as 11 different humans. Forensic pathologists, however, determined that the bones were most likely just random bones from medical cadavers that Matheson had collected for his collection and were not connected to a murder.
Thanks for listening to True Crime Sleep Stories. If you aren't asleep yet, consider following the show. Maybe our next story will give you the peace of mind you desperately need. Or not.